Welcome to Local Talk on KHY Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Kay Potter, your host today. Hello to you, our listener, and welcome to Local Talk. You could say that today's show is historic because it's the first Local Talk program of our Spring 2017 Fund Drive, celebrating 4¾ years on the air. And so Susan Franzen is here to help me with this Fund Drive part. Hello, Susan. It's good to have you here.
Oh, it's good to be here, Kay.
And coming up in today's program, you'll be hearing how ISU's College of Graphic Design is working to help us all get on better with one another as part of a graduate class called Design for Social Change. And you'll be hearing how you can be part of this fun project. We've also got an interview with some flying cyclones about the flying breakfast at the Ames Municipal Airport last Saturday. But first, let's hear from Elwin Taylor about the weather.
Community Radio, KHOI, and this is Von Kettleson. We're talking weather with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor. Elwin, it felt downright balmy at times here this past weekend, particularly on Saturday.
On Saturday, indeed, I did take an opportunity to go down to Ada Hayden Park and walk around the lakes once. I wasn't alone. There were bird watchers, there were cyclists, there were people pushing baby carts. It was just a lovely day, and I saw a lot of people that have been my friends for a long time, and with weather like this, they still are. Well, we do anticipate that the weather's going to stay quite pleasant during this coming week. We do anticipate temperatures will still be above usual. Rainfall chance may be a little above usual, too, but not enough to ruin your day. And the weather outlook, yes, it is good for getting the early plantings done for things that you might have in your garden, things that can handle a little bit of cold weather and go in early, like English peas and your onion sets. If you're a gardener, get them out there. The farmers already are doing what they need to do this time of year.
And a lot of trees with buds on them.
Oh, a goodly number. And pollen, sometimes staining the streets of Ames here and there. When you get somewhere around those maple trees and oak trees, you see things that are beginning to look a lot like spring. Remember, our native trees are always the slow ones to come out. You can tell the ones that we brought in from Europe. They jumped the gun, and they're getting their leaves already.
Talking weather here with ISU Extension climatologist Dr. Elwin Taylor. I'm Von Kettleson on Community Radio, KHOI.
It's always good to hear from Elwin Taylor, and this next interview should also make you feel good. You've probably noticed the new display at Design on Main, the storefront area on Main Street. It's just around the corner from us here at the KHOI studios here on Douglas. And like us at KHOI, the display at Design on Main wants to make everyone feel welcome. It says, "You're welcome to our table." And you should look at it closely. It's part of an ISU graduate class called Design for Social Change, which focuses on nicknames. I heard about it when I spoke to Steve Coates, a graduate student in the College of Design. Now, the first question I had was, when a lot of people think of design, they think of a plan or something drawn on paper, and this isn't that. So,
correct. We're being led by our chair, Bernard Kniff. He is the professor that is taking us through a class called Design for Social Change. Design for Social Change is taking the practice of graphic design into the real world and creating community around design. So our interest is helping the community come together around graphic design, but also around design principles themselves, and helping to enlarge and increase that community through opportunities of design.
Well, bringing communities together, that should speak very much to what we want to do here.
Exactly.
On the radio station. How do nicknames fit into this?
So our first project was to go out and interview three people from random areas. So a lot of our class, well, there's nine of us in the class, and we are more international students than we are students from the United States, which is kind of interesting.
So there's multicultural voices.
Multicultural, exactly. Mm-hmm. So we went out and we interviewed interviewed different people. I went to the mall and a truck stop and interviewed people to find out their stories. That's all we wanted to know. Came back to class and reported what we learned about these three people.
Did you ask them specifically about nicknames?
We did not, because we didn't have that theme at the time.
Okay.
But this interview allowed us to come up with different topics that may have concern for community people. And so this interview then brought us to these different topics that we were able to select from. And the top two that ended up being selected were chicken legs for breakfast, which talked about international foods and how people choose to eat differently, and then also nicknames. And it ended up being a title of Buckaroo is the project name, because we thought of the old-time nickname of they always used to call young boys Buckaroo and different things like that.
Oh, okay.
And so that's where it came from. We also found out it's a game from the 1960s where a horse bucked this this cowboy off, and it was kind of an spring-loaded game, which kind of ended up to be a unique form of this idea of nickname, because Buckaroo, spelled R-U-E, is how we chose to do it, came from the French word down the road. And so,
right, yeah.
So Buckaroo means to be kicked off down the road, and it kind of led to this idea of this nickname.
So what did you discover about nicknames?
We are still discovering is kind of fun. We are one of the reasons we're interested in doing this is we're encouraging the community to log on to our website and kind of give us some feedback about nicknames as well, if they have positive or negative nicknames. Buckaroo, B-U-C-K-A-R-U-E. com.
Can people be anonymous on the website?
Of course they may.
Yeah.
In fact, we are not asking for any last name at all.
Yeah, that would be a lot easier.
Yes,
because if
definitely.
People have got hurtful nicknames they want to talk about.
Correctly.
Too much.
Yep. So if you've walked by our storefront on Design on Main, right here on Main Street, you'll notice that there's an odd saying that says, all are welcome at our table, as well as it's being spelled out in different languages. So we have Pakistani language and Chinese, I think, is on there now, saying all are welcome at the table. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, we have all these names that we have been called for good or bad listed, and there's a drape in between. If you come by at nighttime, you'll see some visuals going on that drape that we've recorded of just unique faces and different opportunities that show different characters and ways that people could encompass this idea of nicknames.
So I'm still waiting for some illustrative examples of what we can learn from nicknames.
Okay. So the illustrations will be these images that I've mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
They will also, what we want to do is we want to gather this information on the website and start developing things from that. So some of the illustrations that we've done already is we're creating a book of our process, which has characters that we've designed. It'll be laid out into a book format. So there's a process there that shows kind of that graphic design idea. But we are also using the images on the windows. We're keeping track of our progress through images as well and putting it together into this project, which will end up to be a graphic kind of image and word-based product.
Okay, so you will end up with something
correctly
graphic and tangible.
Yeah.
Well, for people that haven't seen the window yet, could you give us some idea of what there is to see and understand?
Of course. We have two windows in our storefront school area. Design on Main is kind of an area that's open for graduate classes. So on the second floor, there's more architectural and city planning classes. There's individual art studios as well. So some of the artists that are studying at ISU are up there in their own studios. And then down on the main floor is the gallery and then also our classroom. In the classroom, we have two windows that have one side, it says, all are welcome at our table. And our goal is to set up a desk that has kind of set like a dining room table, because we believe that education happens in conversation as well.
Cool.
And so we want to invite people to come in and learn about us as we learn about everyone else as well. So it kind of develops that community around it. In the second window, we have positive and negative names that people use to define or to qualify who we might be or who they think we might be. Because we are international, there's some names that might be that the international people are called.
Like ethnic slurs, you mean?
Sometimes, yep.
Yes.
Yep, in the negative side or positive. What we found out is that in some of the international students, like some of our friends from China, they use nicknames by saying their first name over twice. So if my name was a Chinese nickname, it would be Steve, which is kind of a unique thing that we don't do here.
Well, people do that with diminutives. I remember a little boy saying, my name's John, but they call me John for short.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So nicknames are interesting. I mean, they can be those proper names repeated, or we found that they, in my example, my nickname was given to me by my older sister, who's 8 years older than I, and as a child, she would call me Fred Albert, or Freddie for short.
Just remind you, Alice, your name isn't Fred, it's Steve.
That is correct. It's names from my grandparents, and so Fred and Albert, and so she just started calling me Freddie, and it kind of stuck with her, but now that I'm grown.
Because she thought you were like your grandfather?
Perhaps. I'm not quite certain.
Because that's interesting, because in some African cultures, they say the grandchild is the grandfather come again, even if the grandfather's still alive.
Yes, that's true.
And, you know, like they're the same person or something. I don't quite understand it, but it's a feeling they have and they enjoy it.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, so that's the way a nickname can come about. How about you? Do you have a nickname?
Yes, sure. But first of all, did you just use this nickname just in the family? It wasn't.
So it actually was just a nickname between my older sister and I.
Right.
And it never took on with the rest of my family. It was just with her.
Right.
And now that I'm older, she doesn't use it as much. And maybe every now and then when she's feeling a little bit nostalgic, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I wanted to know that because I was thinking about nicknames, you know, that I've had when I was thinking about this interview. And the school I went to a girls' school in England, at least for a lot of my school time. And they were really big on nicknames, but there was never one for me that stuck. They tried, my name was Patuk, you know, I kept my maiden name all my life. And they tried Toki, and that didn't stick. They started calling me Chaos because my name's Kay.
Yeah.
Which I sort of like, you know. But that didn't stick. But I happened to tell my mother that they called me Chaos, and that stuck with her. She kind of liked that.
So she called you Chaos then?
Yeah, sometimes, you know. Yeah. And then I had one cousin. He was sort of like a brother, really, because I used to stay with his mother when my parents were abroad. So, you know, that was like my family. And he started calling me Pooh for some reason.
Yeah.
Again, based on my last name, Patrick, somehow.
Yeah.
But that was just between him and me, you know. Sure. And it was an affectionate name. But that was it, really.
It's interesting because we have a student from India in our class who, as a child, was called a name that he felt was derogative. And he turned that name being derogative into something positive and encouraged him to step up and over that name. And today when he hears it, he thinks of something more successful and more proud to use that. So names are interesting.
They are. It's interesting that names, nicknames was the thing that you chose to make people feel welcome, to like talking about nicknames, bringing nicknames out and so on. What have you discovered on your website about nicknames?
We are getting the website up and running. So we have stories from about 6 to 8 people currently. I went and interviewed some people at a truck stop, like I mentioned. And interesting, names in truck stops have a variety of different levels. They go by a CB handle. So they have a nickname there. They go by a nickname just on
CB, the road. CB, Citizens Band Radio.
Yes, yes. And so they go by that nickname. Like one guy went by Rusty Jacket. And so,
But they're names they've given themselves.
Yes. And then there are names that they've been called because of friends or other ways, and names that they're called at home. So they really have 3 pseudonames beyond their official name, which is interesting.
Would you say that most nicknames are affectionate or derogatory?
What I've been finding so far is that they are affectionate. They might start out derogative, but I think in time it becomes something that's affectionate just because it becomes that name that 2 people share. I have love names I call my wife and different things as well, which is really interesting in this project because I think that's what really develops community, is an appreciation and a support for one another.
So we should encourage people to go by and look in the windows of Design on Main, which is just round the corner here from our studios. So that's correct. Just on the corner of Douglas.
Thank you, Douglas. One of the things I'd like to encourage is for the listeners to log on to our website, which is Buckaroo, BUCKARUE.com. Again, Buckaroo, BUCKARUE.com. We'd love to hear stories, and positive or negative. And again, like you said, it's completely anonymous. So,
well, Susan, would you have thought that nicknames could help build community? It wouldn't have occurred to me.
No, not at all. Since the only time I ever had a nickname was when I was looking for a nickname to put in my high school yearbook.
Oh.
And I think, I'm not sure who came up with Pokey, but that's what's written in there, and nobody ever called me that. And
it was just for the yearbook.
For the yearbook nickname. And I've never had a nickname, and I've never liked it when people called me Susie Sue.
Your name's Susan.
Right. And the other one I know is my husband's name is Fritz. I mean, his nickname is Fritz. He's never been called
Hugo.
Which is a little awkward sometimes. But
I don't think most of Fritz's friends even know his name is Hugo. Or a lot of them don't. I didn't for years, actually.
No. His sister, though, used to call him Fritzy, and he hated it. And, he felt that was, that was a put down.
Yeah, well, it's a diminutive. Is she an older sister?
She's an older sister. Yes.
I'm going to ask our engineer, how about you, Cynthia? Did you have a nickname?
Well, I used to work at a different radio station in California, and it was called KIDE. It was a community radio station on an Indian reservation in the Hoopoe Valley. And they, being one of the few white people at the station, they called me like a palliated woodpecker, like a big, which is the large one. It was called Kakana. So basically, I have red hair and very white. And so I was just, they joke and call me like the giant woodpecker, Woody Woodpecker. In kindergarten, I got called Woody Woodpecker. It's not very affectionate. It made me cry. it's funny that should carry over from kindergarten, and then I'm adult and working, and they just call me Woody Woodpecker, but in a Native American name.
Funny. If you've got anything to say about nicknames, log on to that website, Buckaroo, spelled R-U-E at the end. And talking of community, here we are at Community Radio Station. And we've been here for 4¾ years. And we can't keep going without Moolah. So that's what we want to talk to you about now.
Yes, this is our very first program on the air after our fund drive starts. And we want to remind you how important it is if you are not yet a member, you could be one of our 25 new members. That's part of our goal, is to get 25 new members. And if you are a member, please think about renewing your membership at any level. The basic level is $55 a year, or about 15 cents a day. Or you can be a friend of KHOI at $250 a year, or $20 a month. And if we had 500 of those, we wouldn't even have to have fund drives.
No, that's our 500 families campaign, we call that. If we had 500 families, that would take care of all our operating costs. If 500 units, people or families, pledged $250 a year. So we're getting there slowly, but so that's one thing we're aiming at. But we also would like, if you're not already a sustaining member, we'd like you to be a sustaining member. That will make it simpler for you and for us, so that your membership is automatically renewed year after year.
That's what makes you sustaining. I thought it was when you went up to $100 a year. No, it's anyone that's just automatically renewed.
Yes.
Yes.
As Susan said, this is a historic occasion. This is the first local talk of the new fund drive. So Susan and I are pioneers for this. And it was on August the 15th, 2012, that this community radio station, your community radio station, went on the air for the first time. And you'll be hearing more about that later on, because our station manager, we've got all sorts of talk she gave. It was part of a longer interview. It wasn't all Ed, about community radio, the history of community radio, and so on. It'll make you realize, I hope, what a wonderful resource we've got here in Ames. And it was that was the date, August the 15th, 2012, that we first went on the air. And it was crucial that we get on the air at that time. Oh, I think we were ahead of our deadline. But if you go over the deadline, you lose your spot and you've lost your airwaves for good.
Forever. Yes.
Yeah. So that was a great achievement. And since then, we've featured many wonderful shows and talented programmers, exciting events. So we hope you will feel inspired to make a pledge, renew your pledge, up your pledge, do whatever you can. But now let's get on with our exciting program today. This is Local Talk. I'm your host, Kay Puttock, here with Susan Franzen. And some of you, I've been talking about the design on Main and hoping you've noticed that. But something else you might have noticed around town was notices for the fly-in breakfast at the Ames Municipal Airport. Or you might have heard some of the many planes flying in. They flew in for breakfast on Saturday. So Ursula Rudenberg went out to the Ames Airport to see what was going on, and let's hear about that now.
Last Saturday morning, there was a big to-do at the Ames Municipal Airport. You probably saw the signs around town for it, and if you didn't, you probably heard the airplanes. From 7 a.m. to 11 a.m., there was a fly-in breakfast. That means that people flew in from all over the place to have breakfast at the Ames Airport, and there was a ribbon-cutting ceremony. It's all over now, and it's fairly quiet again at the airport. I'm Ursula Rudenberg for KHOI, and I am here with two members of the Flying Cyclones, the group who hosted the event together with the City of Ames and Central Iowa Aviation, which is the company that manages the Ames Airport now. Sam Neff is the safety officer for the Flying Cyclones, and Gabriel Rivera is equipment manager for the Flying Cyclones, and he upkeeps the equipment and fixes it. The Flying Cyclones is an Iowa State student group to get people interested in flying and to discover the joy of flying. And I've just asked Sam and Gabriel how the event actually went.
There was a huge turnout from Ames. We got record turnout. Over 2,000 people attend. It's a great family event.
You served everybody breakfast?
Chris Cakes was here serving breakfast, and they served pancakes from before they were scheduled to open to after they were scheduled to close.
So how many pancakes?
We sold about 1,500 plates of food. It was about 4 pancakes a person.
Wow.
So roughly, that's 6,000 pancakes.
And where were they served?
They were served in the new hangar that was just opened.
I helped with parking from 7 to 9, which were the first 2 hours of the fly-in. And by the time I was done at around 9:15, we had a solid line of cars from the terminal all the way out to the road and backing out on to the road. We had so many cars, we almost didn't know what to do with them. Huge turnout and also excitement. I just remember seeing lots of families come in and kids would see helicopters or planes flying overhead, and they were just getting really excited about it. So huge turnout.
And about 100 airplanes, which was way more than we've ever had before.
Where did they come from?
All over Iowa, also from other states as well. There were local planes that got together. There were people that flew in from other airports.
Vintage biplanes, a few medical helicopters, a Black Hawk helicopter from the Boone National Guard. We had smaller Cessnas.
The Civil Air Patrol, the Iowa State Patrol. People from Illinois, Boone, Des Moines. We had a Learjet fly in from Mason City.
Why did they come?
One of the things that is really cool about aviation is that it's a fairly small community, and these events are a great way for pilots to meet other pilots, get together, and just have a good time.
when they got off their planes, what did they want to talk about with other flyers?
Flying is the number one thing pilots talk about. Share information with each other, share different events with each other, talk about different techniques, different flight experiences we have, ask where the best places are to get lunch in Iowa near an airport. And one of the great things is just get to talk about different experiences we've had. One of the cool things, especially for us being young aviators, is there are people here who have been flying for 40, 50 years, you know, and just getting to hear how much has changed in aviation. So cool to look out in the sky and see multiple aircraft in the pattern, everyone landing, taking off. It was great watching the Learjet pull up in front of the hangar, in front of everyone, and seeing kids just with these enormous eyeballs, just in complete awe of what's going on, watching the Black Hawk take off. As planes arrived and departed, you could see the whole crowd move to go see them, and it was just really neat to see everyone so interested in it. We had a blast. It was a great time.
And the rest of us in town heard them.
Yes, they heard the planes before they even knew this event was going on and came because they heard all the aircraft. A lot of families, which is great.
And did people get to have rides in the airplane?
We did. Central Iowa Aviation was giving rides in their airplanes. They had four planes, and they sold all of their seats for the entire fly-in within an hour and a half.
What did a ride constitute?
It was about 20 minutes. Get in the plane, quick briefing, and then take off the runway, fly around Ames, see the university from the air. I did not talk to anyone who did not enjoy it. It was great to see everyone excited about all the different aircraft. It's great to see a lot of people interested in aviation. We're kind of a little bit out on our own here at the airport, and a lot of people don't even know we exist and that there is as much activity as there is going on. So it's really cool to see people get to come out here, see what we do, and get to see some really cool airplanes as well.
It's a celebration of flying.
Yeah, it's a great feeling. If you've ever taken a flight or on a smaller plane, it's a great feeling.
Can you learn how to fly here at the airport?
You can learn how to fly here. There are two different flight schools here at Central Iowa and also HAPS across the way. Mm-hmm. Both of them provide extensive flight training.
So anybody who wants to learn how to fly can learn? Is there an age limit?
I believe it is 16.
So give me one impression that you got of the day today. Like, what sticks in your mind?
Huge turnout.
I loved the excitement that the community brought. We love seeing all the kids out here, all of our future aviators. Those are exactly the people we want to continue the aviation tradition.
Today there was a ribbon cutting ceremony. What was the occasion?
Ames is undergoing a little bit of renovation. We just had a brand new hangar, which was the hangar that the fly-in breakfast was in. Central Iowa is the new FBO, fixed base operator. FBO is fixed base operator.
What is a fixed base?
It's the operator who operates the airport. They are the ones basically who run the airport. For instance, if you come in an aircraft and you want to park and tie down, Central Iowa is who you talk to.
It's a business that runs the airport.
That is correct.
Okay,
yep.
It.
And they moved in April 1st of this year. And also we're currently building a brand new terminal building. So the ribbon cutting ceremony was to commemorate new FBO, the brand new hangar. There was a lot of work put in from the community and people at the city to get the hangar and the terminal funded. And so this was a celebration of all of that finally taking place. Terminal should be done in about 3 months, I believe, is the current estimate.
You got to admit, we have one of the cutest terminals around. I hope the homey atmosphere stays, because that's what I love about this airport. You feel like you're in somebody's living room.
Yeah. Actually, the new terminal will be a little bit smaller, so it will, I'm sure, maintain its cozy atmosphere.
Well, if you don't know about the airport, think about, we've got Airport Road in Ames, so you can see. It's difficult to see that it's an airport, because the planes are sort of small planes, but you can see it when you drive by on Airport Road. And now I'm happy to welcome our regular monthly guest, Keith Morgan, who always keeps us up to the mark on emergency preparedness. What have you got for us today, Keith?
Good morning, Kay. What I'd like to talk about is how we talk to the public to get them information before a disaster and during a disaster, because we really believe in emergency management, that the public is a big part. We want to keep them informed. We want them to understand how they can protect themselves before a disaster and also during a disaster. If we give them information, then they can make sure to help themselves out, be a part of our overall disaster response. We can tell them not to go here because there's dangers there, or go over to these other locations. That's where there might be some resources.
Where there might be flooding or that kind of.
Flooding or, you know, we always talk about the natural disasters. There are some man-made disasters that we need to worry about, hazardous chemicals, if there should be a spill of one of those, and even terrorism. We have to always keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how can we make sure we're up to date with the communication thing?
Well, let me ask you that. Where do you get your information from when it comes time for learning more about emergencies and during emergencies?
Well, I suppose I listen to the radio. Sometimes it comes on TV if it's in the evening and I'm watching something on TV. My husband also has picked up a weather radio, which is supposedly meant to come on, and whether it's the middle of the night or anything, and tell us if there's a tornado or something coming. I've never seen that work, and so I'm not sure. I have no faith in it, shall we say. But I'm, you know, but there it is. So,
well, and media is one of the main ways beforehand. And like what we're doing right now is we try and get information out so that people can have the storage of knowledge that they can draw upon when the disaster occurs. We've actually branched out. We've got Facebook nowadays, and I'm a bit more old school than a lot of folks, and I wasn't a big fan of Facebook, but it has been very, very useful for us because we can use that day to day to try and get information out to folks. We won't flood you if you sign up and you like our page and you start following our page. But occasionally, once or twice a week, we might put out something. Severe Weather Awareness Week, every day on that, during that week, we put out special information. But day to day, we might let you know a little bit about ongoing events where you can gain more knowledge. And then as we start transitioning into weather, then we'll go ahead and – because we're always looking out a day or so ahead. If we see that there's a chance that severe weather might be coming, we'll give you a little bit of an idea. We'll link over to the National Weather Service's webpage, which will direct you to more specific information to give you an idea that it's time to start looking at the weather.
I'm not on Facebook. Well, I was at one point, but I just never kept up with it. So I'm effectively not on it. So am I in danger there?
No, there's other things. We have a web page that you could go and visit occasionally, and it has a lot of different links that will take you to emergency management information. And from those links, you can also branch out, because we'll provide you links on over to the FEMA websites and other local sites like that. The other thing is you can just call our office. Our phone number is 515-382-7315. And we'll go ahead and we'll try and answer any question that you might have. And if you come up with one that stumps us, well, then we'll try and research it a little bit more for you.
Now, I believe, though, that if you can get emergency warnings of disasters by telephone if you're registered properly.
Sure. As we start moving on into the actual events themselves, we do have a system. It's called Story County Iowa Alerts, which we really encourage everybody to go ahead and sign up with. If you have a landline, your phone number should automatically be loaded into our system. If you don't have a landline, then we really need you to go onto our website and to sign up. And if you just do Story County Iowa Alerts registration, it will take you right to the registration, and we even have a YouTube video on how to register there. What's really good about this website is you can put in a cell phone and you can put in an email address, and during a disaster, we'll be able to send you text messages, voice messages, and emails to let you know. Now, we don't use this system to warn you about thunderstorms that are coming. And that was a very conscious decision. The leadership of this county, they looked at it, and they were concerned that we'd be sending out too many messages, mm-hmm. and it might drive people away from using it. So right. We have reserved it. If we use this system, it's really important. The great thing about this system is we can be very, very specific. We can draw a box around any place in Story County, and only those phone numbers that are registered within that area will get those kind of messages. Another way that it also works is if you have a community of interest We can also check boxes. And those people that have an interest in that community, the message will go out to them. So
that would be somewhere where their relatives were or something like that, you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, I live in Story City. If my children were going to the middle school, well, that would be in Roland, and I work in Nevada. So I might sign up to get messages for Story City, Roland, and Nevada. If you have, like you were talking about, relatives that live in a different community and or somebody that you care for in a different community, you would want to sign up for that community mm-hmm. to know what's going on there. So it's a very adaptable system. It will hit you up three ways with the information, and we'll probably use that to drive you on over to another place to get information and follow-up information. Mm-hmm. But it makes it really easy for us in emergency management. If we have to get a message out quickly that's very, very urgent, we can go ahead and use this system to give you the information to help you be safer.
So the take-home here is, if you still got a landline, old-fashioned like me, you're okay. You're already on this. But if you only got a cell phone and that's all you use, you should sign up. You should register. And you go online, Story County Emergency Alerts.
Story County Iowa Alerts Registration. If you
Story
put that
County,
into the
Iowa Alerts.
Into your search engine, it'll bring you right up to the website. And then from there on, if you don't have a computer, give us a call. We'll go ahead and we'll take your information over the phone and we'll go in and register for you, because we really feel that this is very, very important that everybody signs up for it.
I don't know if this is really relevant, but I just have to, since Susan is here and Keith is here, and Susan has a sailboat, a 30-foot sailboat, which I've been on, and which they navigate through the fog by radio. I was very impressed. I don't know
not by radio, by GPS.
Well, whatever you were doing, I was impressed.
but actually, the weather radio for us is vital, and it's vital that we have it tuned to the closest station, because the weather builds up on the lake, and so it makes a big difference whether it's the station that's 5 miles away or the station that's 20 miles away, because they're not the same weather systems. And that's you're very, very aware of how local these and important they are.
Oh, exactly. And even how you use that, even if you're stationary, I recommend to people, if you live here in Ames, it's good to have Story County in your weather radio. But I also recommend having Boone County in, because most of our weather comes from the west. So this will give you a little bit more of a notification if something is coming our way. And also, you know, test your weather radio. As we were talking beforehand, just go and turn on your weather radio. If you can hear the weather forecast being broadcast over that weather radio, then you're probably getting pretty good reception, and it should work when it comes time that you need it to work.
Okay, I'll check that out when I get home then. Well, this is, of course, one of the things that radio historically is famous for, warning people of disasters and wars of the world and things like that. And so this is another thing, reason to be grateful for your community radio station.
And we send out, if it's other items, we'll send out media releases, and we've got you on our media release, so you'll get it. And hopefully you'll become a partner with us to try and keep the public informed of what's going on.
Yes, in fact, I believe before we went on the air, we talked about situations down, for example, I think it was when in Hurricane Katrina, there was a local station that was sending out reports when the big ones were down. And it was amazing.
Any way that we can get communications out to people is vital. And that's why we recognize that a lot of our public is using different means. We'll also send out articles out to the newspapers. We'll use the media to try and get our message out also, both the large media outlets and our more local media outlets. We'll use cell phones. We'll use social media. It's a bit difficult for us because there's only two of us in the shop, but we'll try and hit as many of the different avenues, because we realize people get their information from a lot of different ways.
Yeah, well, thank you very much, Keith Morgan, for coming in to update us on this. And just those phone numbers again, 515-382-7315, and that will do what exactly?
You'll be ringing my desk. And if I don't pick it up, the deputy, Melissa Spencer, she'll pick it up. There are times that we're not in the office. Leave us a message, and I'll get back to you.
And make sure that you are registered for emergency communications about severe events.
And how do you – and what's the –
Go ahead and put in your search engine, Story County, Iowa Alerts Registration.
Story County, Iowa Alerts Registration. Well, thank you very much, Keith Morgan.
And now we need to remind everybody that this is the beginning of our fund drive. And we talked earlier about memberships, becoming a member at $55 a year, or becoming a sustaining member, just making that a renewal. So you don't even have to think to call us, or becoming one of the 500 families, $250 a year. But I just noticed that we have 400 members in a listening area where we have 400,000 potential. Is that right? 400,000 potential listeners. So we have a ways to go with our listeners and our members.
Yeah. We're getting bigger all the time, and we're getting more evidence all the time of a bigger listenership. But we've got a lot more potential there. So,
right now, we have a special incentive to become a member. Several of our loyal listeners have created a $15,000 challenge grant for this fund drive. That means that every dollar you pledge earns a second dollar from the challenge grant. And that means your money is going twice as far to support KHOI. So,
yes, this shows new growing confidence in KHOI. Before we even began talking to anybody on the radio about people had already given $15,000 as a pledge of trust in KHOI.
Yeah, yes, but if we don't make $15,000, we don't get that $15,000.
Well, yeah. So it's important. So we rely on you to do your part, yes.
Yes, and so the way to do that is to phone 515-292-2878, right?
That is right. And to give you an idea of what a great achievement it was for us, even to get onto the air those four and three quarters of years ago, let's listen to the next audio.
Well, community radio is a worldwide phenomenon when local people produce and host radio programs and participate in operating the radio stations themselves. It's a community space for people to meet and collaborate. It's a way to serve the community in a new way. In a sense, they are community media centers. One of the positive things about it is it's an actual physical space where people can get together and interact with each other and work together in person, not just online or through the mail or through the telephone. Community radio's conceptual roots predate commercial radio. It started when ordinary citizens became fascinated with radio technology, which was really developed by the military. When the military developed radio technology, they basically used it as a point-to-point walkie-talkie system where they essentially used it to say, I'm here, where are you? And they didn't really think about the options of broadcasting because that's not really what they do. It was really the teenagers who were sitting up in their attics and discovering this technology. Did the realization hit that you can use this technology to speak to the world and make a public statement? And that was really the birth of the concept of broadcasting, which is a term which comes from agriculture. You know, the image of the man out in the field sowing the seeds, throwing the seeds onto the ground, that's what broadcasting is. So broadcasting is that concept of one person speaking and sowing his ideas, thoughts, and music to the world. Community radio itself, as a media, was invented in the 1940s. It like most great ideas, it was invented simultaneously in two places. One was in Bolivia, where a group of miners were on strike, and they figured out that while they were on strike, they could use the radio to keep in contact with each other and to help each other get through the strike. And simultaneously, a group of war resistors in the United States who were pacifists got together and decided they wanted to use radio to spread the concept of peace. And they started Pacifica Radio in Berkeley, California, KPFA. Lewis Hill is the most famous founder of he's the member of the group that's the most well known, and they actually were in a prison together, or detention camp, I think is a better word for it, because they didn't want to go fight in World War II. So while they were in this detention camp, they had a book club, and they did a lot of discussion about how to promote peace in the world. And they came to the conclusion that radio was a way to do it. And so they founded the concept of community radio in the United States, which was really the first time that the concept was created that radio could be used for public discourse. At the time when they founded KPFA, radio was being very rapidly taken over by commercial interests. People, it's kind of like today with the internet, people finally realized how much money could be made. And so the airwaves, which originally started kind of with colleges and educational programs, was very rapidly becoming commercial radio. In fact, the AM dial was the dial that everybody was using in those days, and it was full. And so they actually had to go to the FM dial, which was considered an inferior dial in those days, and they had to literally give out radios because nobody could pick up FM radio.
Well, that's something about community radio. But just for us to get on the air those years ago, that was a great achievement. To give you an idea of what a great achievement it was for us even to get onto the air, listen to this next audio.
The hardest part is getting airwaves. So first you have to get a permit from the FCC allocating a particular airwave to you. That is the hardest part. And the fact that we have that is close to a miracle.
What does it take to get that?
Well, first of all, you have to wait until the FCC creates a filing window to file for this. And prior to 2007, when we filed for KHOI, it had been about 20 years before that was possible to do for a number of reasons. These days, you have to wait until the FCC announces a filing window. Usually, these windows last only 1 week. So that means that you, prior to the filing window, you have to be aware that this is going to happen. You have to fill out a daunting application, which really requires a lawyer, because if there's one thing wrong on the application, it's out. There's no forgiveness. You have to find a radio tower and have a contract, show assurance to the government that you have a relationship with a radio tower that will broadcast your radio. You have to have an engineer who has the software to figure out where there actually is room to put a new radio station, where there's free airspace. There's not a lot of radio engineers in the country that do that. I would say there's less than 10. So you have to find somebody, and they have to be good, so that they really make a good proposal. So you have to create a proposal to the government, and that costs quite a bit of money in engineering and lawyer fees. And then you have to prove to the government in your application that you have financial assurances, that somebody is backing you to ensure that, in fact, you can follow through with this. Then you have to apply, which is daunting because when these filing windows open, hundreds and thousands of people apply through one website. So you have to go early so that you can actually get on. And then what happens a lot of time is that you end up asking for airspace that is competing with other people's applications. So then you have to either prove that your application's the best, or you have to negotiate with your neighbors to find a solution where you're no longer competing with each other. And that's what we did here in Ames. We applied in 2007. We were competing with 11 other entities, and we found a very good way to compromise with the people in our area. And therefore, we were able in 2009 to go to the FCC and say, we have found a solution. And they said, great, you got your permit. And then you have 3 years to build the station. And if you are not on the air in 3 years to the second, you will lose your frequency forever. So you have to demonstrate viability. And as soon as you get on the air, you notify the FCC that you have commenced broadcasting, and they send you a license. And then about every, I think, 3 or 5 years, you have to, in a sense, establish with the FCC that, in fact, you're still viable. So that's what you have to do with the government. Then you have to raise the money to build. You have to raise the money for the equipment to build to build broadcast equipment at a radio site. You need a transmitter. You need antennas. You need all the equipment that you need at the radio tower site. We had to buy a house, because our radio site didn't have a house on it, because something has to, the equipment has to be somewhere. And then you have to build a studio space. I think when everything was said and done, it was about $150,000 to $200,000 investment in building and equipment. We were fortunate. Most of our studio was built by volunteers, and there were a few companies in town that gave us help with that for free.
And here we are sitting in that studio that was built with volunteer labor so that volunteers can sit in here and do your shows for you.
Getting up at the crack of dawn to come to you and give you.
Yes. But it's obviously, it's not just something that we do for fun. We do it because we really believe in creating community through communication, which is our motto, and it's what we try to do when we report on what's happening in the legislature, which we last night we had a party here, a kickoff party, and someone commented on the valuable programming that we had on the legislative issues that have been considered and voted on recently. This is something that we have people who believe this is important, so they do those programs. And, okay, you're looking puzzled at me.
I was just waiting to add to that.
While
Susan and I were talking before, she was saying it's important but to point out the distinction between community radio and public radio, which, of course, are both worthy of our support. But community radio, although they both need your support, I think community radio, especially starting up, I mean, we're still relatively new radio station. We really need support.
Well, we are exclusively listener supported.
Yes.
And we have some underwriting, but these are, you know, listeners also. Now, public radio has some public support. They have some public support. They also, of course, have to be somewhat listener supported because, you know, they have fund drives too. I remember there was a time when our public radio station here in Ames didn't have to have fund drives because they had an endowment. They were able to carry on. But broadcasting is expensive, and it's important if you value it that you support it.
Right. And funding for these things is being cut down everywhere, as we know.
Except ours is only growing because we didn't have any support except from our listeners.
And we hope it will keep growing if you pledge today. Come in, do whatever. If you're not a member, you can join right now by calling the station at 515-292-2878 or go online at khoifm.org. and touch the donate button. You can also text it too. Text us at 515, and this is a different number. Text us if you want to pledge on by texting 515-200-7758. Hmm. Or you can just come by the studio. That's what a lot of people like to do, and we love to see you.
Yes, and that's really the most fun. Whether you are an old friend stopping by, or whether you have never been to the studio at 410 Douglas, right across from the Octagon, just around the corner from Main Street, and stop in and meet us.
And if you do that, you'll be able to see the design on Main thing at the same time, just as you walk around the corner.
Right.
But I think we've got time just for the very next little brief audio, which is just over a minute, telling you about International Community Radio.
There's an International Association of Community Radio, and they had a conference in Argentina, in Buenos Aires, and I was astounded at the people that I met there, people who are literally putting their lives on the line to have community radio. Most countries, especially in third world, do not have First Amendments in their constitutions. They don't have protected airwaves. So they have to fight to be able to speak freely and to have access to airwaves. And many of them don't yet. And many of them have to use the internet. Community radio is really a concept that goes beyond actually the airwaves. I met a gentleman who was in Cairo. I went there before the Arab Spring, and they had no access to the airwaves. And he was doing community radio with young people, with teenagers in Cairo, and they were using the internet because they had no access to the air. So it's both a concept and actual access to the air. We are very lucky in the United States. A lot of people have done a lot of hard work to give us a constitution that protects our right to speak and also that has a protected part of the radio dial for non-commercial radio.
This has been Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a program where we explore stories, people, and places of Central Iowa. I've been your host, Kay Puttock, helped today by Susan Franzen. You've just been hearing KHOI Community Radio Station Manager telling us about the history and philosophy of community radio. We also heard today from Keith Morgan of Emergency Preparedness of Story County and from Steve Coates, a graduate student in the College of Design, about a project called Design for Social Change, focusing on nicknames, a project that you too can be part of by checking out their website, Buckaroo, spelled R-U-E at the end, .com.
Local Talk's theme music is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you'd like to join our team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878 or contact us through our website, khoifm.org, or just drop us by the studio at 410 Douglas in downtown Ames, where you'll always be welcome. If you enjoyed the show, please tell your friends and check us out on Facebook.
This show was engineered by Cynthia McClure, and this show will air again at noon today and at 7 p.m.
No, at 7 p.m. We should announce it. We have a Pantorium session.
Oh,
yes.
So it won't air. So we'll have a live music at 7 p.m. today. So this show will air again at noon, but at 7 p.m. you'll have something different today. But you can also listen to this show and all our past local talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. And you'll find today's show on our homepage as soon as our webmaster, Ron Carson, can put it up there. KHOI is streaming online at khoifm.org, where you can also find an archive of past shows. Go ahead.
And now stay tuned for Morning Masterpieces. And please remember that you, as listener, are the most important part of Local Talk. Your participation as audience and your generous donations help make it all possible. And now, thank you for listening. And
we'll see you again on the radio.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.
Funding for KHOI is provided by London Fest, an all-day extravaganza. Sponsored by Cafe Diem and London Underground, London Fest brings you European food and fun right here in Ames, on April 22nd from 2 p.m. to 12 a.m. Find out more information about this at London Fest Ames on Facebook.